What's your favorite memory from our werewolf class?
Don't we want to do book news?
Do we have book news?
I mean, this is old book news, but I was just going to talk about the Rick Riordan Presents books.
Oh, go for it.
Because I feel like we talk about a lot of white dudes writing fantasy.
Sure, because fantasy is gatekept by white dudes.
It's absolutely gatekept by white dudes, and like all culture, like white dudes have the upper hand in publishing.
Bye. Okay, anyway, talk about Rick Riordan.
So for those of you who have not read Rick Riordan, one, you're missing out. What are you doing with your life? The Rick Riordan books are gold. But he writes YA, middle grade, kind of blurs the lines there a little bit, even kind of blurs into, like, the new adult genre, but genre is, you know, a mixed bag. But that retells myth in the modern day.
Percy Jackson, if you haven't heard of Percy Jackson.
Percy Jackson, the Magnus Chase books are incredible. Those are my favorite ones.
Yeah, those are...
They're super good. But,
hilarious.
Rick Riordan has done Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, and Norse mythology. And so a lot of people, you know, really are enjoying the books and wanted to see different mythologies, but Rick Riordan, as a, you know, pretty non-problematic white dude, was like...
I mean, he did go Egyptian mythology.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I was going to go. Like, that one, he hopefully have learned his lesson. Like, he should not have maybe tackled that one, but with the... Then he started an imprint to let... people from various cultures tell the stories of their mythology. And so the first one coming out is Aru Shah and the End of Time, which comes out March 27th, I believe. So just in a couple weeks. But and then the next ones coming out after that are The Stormrunner by J.C. Cervantes. Wow, I totally messed that up. The Stormrunner by J.C. Cervantes, which is coming out in 9 of September. Is that correct?
Yes.
September 18th. I'm so good at the calendar. and this is about Mayan mythology, and then Dragon Pearl, which is coming out in January of 2019, is about Korean mythology. So, and Aru Shah is Hindu and Indian mythology. I don't know if I said that. And so there's an excerpt of Aru Shah that was published in Entertainment Weekly a couple months back, which I'll put across our social media platforms, and I really think you guys should check them out. They look to be really exciting, and the most important news you will ever hear is that the mentor in Aru Shah is a fucking pigeon.
I was gonna say, that's the only thing I know about it. I texted Sally immediately because she loves pigeons.
Yeah, we have not covered this yet. I love pigeons so much. It's unbelievable. When Emily and I were in London together, I would say hi to them on the street, and I continue that behavior to this day. The other day, I, like, slapped Emily across the chest and was like, look at that brown pigeon, because she was beautiful. She was very thick. Beautiful.
Oh, damn, she's thick.
She was beautiful.
She's
thick.
A pigeon.
She's beautiful. She was like thicker than usual. She was really fluffy. I just spilled water all over my overalls.
Oh, no. Good thing you weren't wearing a microphone, because our microphones suck.
We'll figure that out. So audio quality is resting at what it normally is.
Shit.
I would say, like, I was going to do this on a number scale, but shit is fine.
Yeah, out of 10, we are at shit. Don't choke, don't choke, oh my god. Okay, I'll introduce us really quick, then we have to talk about werewolves.
Spooky, scary.
Boys becoming men.
Men becoming wolves.
If we can get through this entire podcast without referencing that song again, I'll be so impressed.
Yeah.
I love it. Hi, this is Everybody Hates Rand, the podcast where everybody refers to two white 20-somethings who live in New York.
Hello.
Oh, creepy. I'm Emily Jusha.
And that cackle came from me, Sally Goodger.
Who else?
Yeah, it's a very distinctive cackle.
Well, I laugh in silence, wheezing.
It's okay, I take up all the laughosphere, so you can't enter it.
Okay, now tell me what your favorite memory from the wolf class is.
God, there are so many. Like, there are memories that are content-based, a la a movie that we watched where a man became a werewolf mid-orgasm, like, actively on top of a woman, and I, texted Emily, he's becoming a werewolf, C-U-M-M-I-N-G.
We did a lot of, I sat directly in front of Sally in that class, and we would just text the entire class.
Yeah.
I don't know why he let us, or
We weren't hiding it.
Yeah, we were. I was on top of my desk.
Texting.
We were laughing at each other's texts. I don't get it.
Yeah.
My favorite moment was probably when he was going to be out of town for a conference because our class was taught by, and we'll avoid saying his name here, I guess, although it might happen.
I think we say it in another podcast. Don't go looking for it.
Yeah, don't look. You don't know it. Anyway, our class was taught by the world's leading expert on werewolves. That's not a joke.
Yeah, literally. Like, that exists.
He's exactly what you would expect from the world's leading expert on werewolves, actually.
Yeah.
But he had to be gone for a conference one day because he had to do an academic conference on werewolves. That's the life we were living at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, this is the day we would have studied Red Riding Hood. So he, like, constructed a whole page on the school's, what's that called? Campus.
Yeah, it was called Campus. Used. Yeah.
It was like he had some links to some short stories and stuff like that and, like, basically had uploaded a slideshow. And I opened that, and basically the first image I saw was a, like, hentai Red Riding Hood.
I remember that.
It was, like, an anime porn, like, girl with her titties basically full out.
Yeah, and some, like, wolf, like, probably pawing one of her naked breasts.
It was, like, getting fucked by a wolf or something like that. And I was like, first of all, you thought this was appropriate in an academic setting?
Yeah.
How? Second of all, I can't believe that I have to scroll through this image every time I open this goddamn page.
Yeah. Everything we talked about Red Riding Hood was garbage, but it may have been in the context of Red Riding Hood where our professor used an image in reference to something one of our classmates pointed out was the lead singer of My Chemical Romance.
Yeah, like he'd Googled Scruffy Man or something like that and got the lead singer of My Chemical Romance.
And just, like, threw it up there.
That was the same classmate who said that Kanye West is the best musician who's ever lived.
No, like, with dead seriousness, this is what he said. He said, I remember this vividly. He's like, Kanye West is the greatest artist who's ever lived. A god. A genius. Period.
You can't even argue with that. I mean.
Yeah. I was like.
Okay, I guess.
And I was like, sure, Jan. Like, we are not. And we, like, weren't even talking
about music. No one was arguing with him.
Yeah, everyone was like, yeah, okay. Kanye, whatever. Like.
Yeah, Yeezy.
Cool. Calm down, bruh.
What a wild ride.
Yeah, what a wild class that was.
So anyway, Wheel of Time.
That's where we're coming from there. Confusion, trauma, and a lot of really shitty horror movies and horror books.
Oh, I can't even, like, here's the thing. Sally has some memories of that class that I don't have because I completely blocked it out. I just have no memory of it.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about we'll it more get in a there. Minute. God. Here's where we're at in Wheel of Time today. Fellowship just broke up, and we're going to pick up with Perrin as point of view narrator. Basically, Perrin wakes up by the river, which is where he climbed out wet.
Yes.
A chapter before.
Also, Perrin wakes up, like, he's basically, like, buried himself in leaves.
I know.
And he wakes up, and there are, like, fucking twigs in his hair. Like, God. A little nature boy. And he's like, oh, there's twigs in my hair. Like, brushes them out of his
And then feet. He sings and a bird brings him an egg for his breakfast.
Yeah, that's and then he meets seven dwarves. Yes. And he becomes their housekeeper to prepare him for motherhood and marriage. That's the underlying moral of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves.
I hate it. That and somnophilia. Gross.
Yeah.
That. Or is it necrophilia or is it both? Well, I mean, it's technically somnophilia because she's asleep, but also she's technically dead.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a liminal blurring between somnophilia and necrophilia.
Horrifying, let's never say that again.
Which is also what they said about my upcoming
Stop it! Title of your sex tape?
Title of your sex tape. It really blurs the lines between somnophilia and necrophilia. That's quite a mouthful.
I'm gonna die. Okay. Fucking Perrin wakes up and goes down the river in search of anyone. He finds Edwin. Edwin has successfully built a fire, kept Bella the horse with her, so she still has her food that was in the saddlebags. Perrin's all like, damn, she's doing better than me.
Yeah.
They set up camp, talk, and one of the running themes of these chapters is that Perrin feels that he's taken leadership in this situation, which is a really weird kind of thing because there's actually no indication that Edwin is giving him any authority except that a few times she looks to him for, like, a contribution.
Yeah.
Basically. And is willing to, like, go with what he has suggested.
Yeah, and this is another really weird moment of, like, a bizarre patriarchal attitude coming out in these boys, because he's, like...
And we've said earlier that Perrin's better than Rand, and I think he is, but, like, on the sliding scale, it goes Rand, Perrin, Matt.
Yeah, no, I said that, and I was talking about that a lot last episode, but then I, like, reread these chapters, and I was, like, I spoke too soon. Like, Perrin is being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's talking about how, like, he's, like, Edwin never would, like, take... Like, what does he say? He's like, Edwin would never let anybody else take charge or, like, some type of nonsense, yet she keeps looking to me, and I'm like, what Edwin is doing in those scenarios all the time is being like, I don't exactly know what's going on. I'm going to, like, turn to my partner in forestry, and we're going to have a conversation about it. And
I know, like, it's like, Perrin's never been in a situation one-on-one with someone his age before. Yeah. Like, that's what you do. You look, like, I can't decide where to go for dinner. Sally decides. That doesn't mean Sally's the leader of our entire relationship. It means we're equals, and I'm going to make a decision next time.
It's so weird. And so he's just, like, automatically assuming that, like, any type of, like, submission by Edwin is her, like, submitting to him totally. It's very... Submission used in air quotes, because that's not what she's doing at all.
No, yeah. It's... Oh, God, it's so weird.
It's super... It's really bizarre.
It's like an extended... It's like an extension of that moment when Rand thinks he's in charge because everyone happens to, like, start their horses...
Yeah.
They start their horses, like, start their engines.
Turn the key.
God. Everybody starts to, like, kick their horses into gear, like, a minute after he does. So he's like, oh, I'm the leader.
Yeah.
It's just, like, I don't know. I think it's a little bit Robert Jordan playing with gender dynamics.
Yeah.
And, like, showing us that there is a patriarchy still in this fantasy world.
Yeah.
I think it's also just kind of a, sort of badly written coming of age thing where he thinks, oh, these young men are going to have to be in leadership positions, so I need to show them, like, experiencing leadership for the first time. But, like, plot twist, Edwin's going to be a huge leader too, and we don't see her, like, stressing out every time she feels like she has to take charge.
Yeah.
In fact, she does take charge in moments, I'd say, of the trio that forms between her, Elaine, and Nynaeve. Edwin does sort of naturally take a leadership position, mm-hmm. but I don't remember it. I could be wrong, like, watch me eating my words 2 books from now, but she doesn't ever, like, feel like she has total responsibility for the other two. That's totally just, like, a masculine thing in these books.
It's an absolute masculine thing, and it really, like...
It's a turnoff.
It's a huge turnoff, because, yes, I think Robert Jordan is, like, trying to... Well, I don't even care what he's trying to do, but he is, like, troubling gender dynamics a little bit, but I also, like, don't want to be that kind to him. Like, I was rereading this section with Perrin and Edwin, and I'm like, honestly, Robert Jordan, it's honestly kind of a miracle I got through this first book, because the way Edwin is treated by the boys is terrible. It's just actually, like, really bad, and I'm just, like, it's so frustrating in fantasy to see women constantly treated like this.
Yeah, and unlike a lot of his other treatment of gender dynamics, which are kind of, like, tongue-in-cheek, like, a lot of the stuff going on with Nynaeve.
Yeah.
And kind of her relationship with gender and male versus, like, you know, the whole, the sex divide is all sort of tongue-in-cheek and sort of, like, meant to be taken with a grain of salt. This all reads very sincerely, which, yeah, is super troubling.
Yeah, because, like, with Nynaeve, like, not to say that age has any part to do with it, but she's a little more of the, like, quote-unquote marrying age.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot to do there where it's, like, I don't know, this always really annoys me, but a lot of people who are, like, married, like, joke about, like, husband and wife roles and, like, stuff like that. That's always supposed to be, like, really tongue-in-cheek and, like, really charming, and Nynaeve is a little bit more, like, in that realm of what's mm-hmm. happening. It, like, really bugs me a lot that she, like, won't really accept male competency. Sometimes it's really hilarious, and other times I'm like, Tom is 90,000 years old. He's doing fine.
Tom knows what the fuck he's doing.
Tom is doing fine. You, however, are not.
Yeah.
Nine of you are deeply incompetent a lot of the times, which is, I love her. But, yeah, this is really, really super, it's just really off-putting, and, like, Perrin is just so, like, annoying about it. So, yeah, here's me eating my words, because I'm like, Perrin is so much better than Rand, and it's like, yeah, you said a sliding scale, like, Rand is basically, like, Edwin is my property.
Yeah, Rand in this situation would be somehow even more annoying.
Yeah.
Perrin, at least we don't have to deal with him having romantic feelings toward Edwin.
Mm-hmm.
So at least he's coming at it from, like, a platonic, I don't know, standpoint.
Yeah, and, like, what you also mentioned about the whole coming of age thing, and it's always a really interesting part of coming of age story is like having to learn how to take responsibility for yourself and oftentimes take responsibility for other people. And I don't know if like Robert Jordan just shouldn't have had any of the boys paired with any of the women in that context.
Yeah, because Rand and Matt are in this situation a few chapters from now where they're on their own and sort of taking responsibility for each other.
Yeah.
And that reads, I don't think you liked it very much, at least what I remember from when you were reading it, but I quite like that sequence in the book because it's very sweet.
Yeah.
And it's very, like, boys being platonic friends and taking care of each other, which, as we know, men are frequently allowed.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it gives them room to grow as leaders without, having all this, like, troubling, like,
patriarchal nonsense. Yeah. Which is also super annoying because, like, there's no reason that men being in a leadership position over women shouldn't be patriarchal. Like, I mean, inherently it is. Like, that's just what the system is, that men are on top. But, like, in, like, this interpersonal situation between Perrin and Egwene, it would have been so refreshing and lovely to be like, yeah, you can have a relationship of respect with a woman. Like, Perrin, your goal. Anyways, I just wish it would have been done better, period.
Yeah.
I'm rambling, but period. I wish it would have been done better.
Basically, if this entire sequence was done without Perrin's little side commentary about being a leader, then it would be a lovely thing, and I wouldn't be annoyed by it at all. Because, great, they're both insecure. They're both trying to figure out what to do. Like, anyway, they're trying to figure out what to do. Perrin suggests that instead of making for Whitebridge, which is where they kind of all agreed, that's where they're next going, so maybe Moiraine can catch up to them there. Perrin says, let's bypass that and go to Caemlyn, which was their next destination. Following that, it would be Tarvalon. Mm-hmm. This is a really stupid idea. Reading it, I was like, God, I can't believe the idiocy here. I can't believe Egwene went with it. Because it's like, oh, God, it's so stupid. Like, you don't have a fucking map.
No, and Perrin mentions, he's like, I studied the, like, map that Master Lewin has in his forge, but everyone is like, this map isn't accurate.
He's like, I'm going off this one map that I saw 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you know what wilderness looks like? Do you know, like...
Perrin, you dummy.
I know, it's so stupid, but anyway, Edwin goes with it, which is where Perrin gets this notion that he's in charge. And they start traveling. There's kind of a... There's a thing where Edwene wants them to share the horse. Perrin doesn't like it because he thinks Edwene should be riding the entire time. But she's like, fuck you. So they do take turns. Although Perrin does have a sort of funny thing where he's like, it's because I'm really big and the horse is really small. And every time I get on her, it feels like she's mad at me.
Yeah, Bella like looks over her shoulder like, again?
Bella's like, really? Again? You fucking beast?
Yeah, like you're a giant.
You're a giant.
You're a giant and I hate you. Bella the horse, page 300 or whatever.
Yeah, Perrin's like, okay, I hate this.
Honestly.
Oh my god.
I don't know if you heard that. Those were our neighbors.
Our neighbors are.
Bella is honestly the MVP of this sequence because we will get there in a minute, but she's like the only one where Elias is like the only one not making a fucking ruckus in the woods is your damn plow horse.
Yeah, there's like not much to go over between them. Traveling and meeting Elias, they're kind of struggling for food, so when they finally do smell a cook fire, there is like a little thing where Perrin finds out that Egwene started that first fire using the one power.
Yeah.
And that like ticks him off. Well, it doesn't tick him off, it like really stresses him out.
Yeah, he's afraid of it.
Basically like, it's like he's found out that she was playing with a stick of dynamite, you know?
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, the one power can be pretty destructive.
Yeah, and, like, Egwene doesn't really know what she's doing, and I don't think Perrin knows this at this moment, but, like, the idea that Egwene is out on her own, like, using the one power could potentially be a beacon for Trollocs.
Yes.
So, like, Perrin inadvertently being like, please don't do that again, is, like, really good for them.
Except she does do it again, like, every night. She just, like, never manages to make it work again.
Yeah.
Which just, kind of funny to watch her go from that to, I don't know, two books from now when she's gonna be blowing things up.
Yeah.
Iconic. With her mind. God, I love her. She's so cool. Anyway, so they smell a cook fire, go up to it warily, and it turns out to be Mountain Man / Crazy Uncle Elias. God, I love him.
Yeah, Jim Bridger, but with wolves.
What do you think Elias's celebrity look-alike is?
Jim fucking Bridger. No. Is it Sam Elliott who's always in the
cowboy
movies?
I was going to say him, too.
Yeah, that would totally be Elias.
He's got that, like, southern drawl and huge mustache.
Like, gravelly beard. Absolutely. A gravelly voice. And beard, probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's hanging out. He invites them over to eat with him. I don't know. I said that's weird. This is their first... They're kind of having a conversation, and he finally looks up, and Perrin realizes he has yellow eyes.
Yes.
Golden eyes.
Golden eyes.
Ooh. And it's pretty funny reading that with, you know, the context of the next few books when everyone's kind of going to flinch when they see Perrin's golden eyes. And so it's funny to have Perrin experience that from the first time and the last time, really.
Yeah.
On the other end of it, and sort of, like... You just want to say, God, Perrin, like, please frame and remember this moment so it's understandable to you when everyone kind of
and
freaks
like,
out.
Jesus Christ, he's got a dog's eyes in his head.
Yeah. And Perrin's first thought is, a Trolloc. Oh, no, 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 no. Trollocs don't have yellow eyes. They have brown eyes or whatever the fuck black eyes are.
Yeah, brown-eyed girl.
Yeah. Trolloc.
Friendly neighborhood goat man. So what's really interesting about Elias having golden eyes is because usually in, like, a werewolf story, there'll be some sort of, like, first physical manifestation that something has happened. It'll be, like, they get bit by something, but that bite heals. Or, like, it's oftentimes it's, like, teeth or hair or, like, they get, like, really terrible eyebrows. I don't know. But there's some sort of, like, physical manifestation
like
on the body.
Super strength all of
a sudden. Yeah, or, like, super strength. They get, like, really ripped or whatever. Or they're just, like, got their regular doughy body, but they can, like, pick up cars.
Yeah, sure.
Ideal. But Robert Jordan doesn't do any of that because Perrin's not, like, technically a werewolf. We can go into that whole taxonomy of werewolves, but isn't, like, becoming wolf man. But, there is still that, like, physical change that, like, marks him as being different from other people. And it's really interesting that it's, like, the eyes because you can't really, like, pass that off. And, like, if you get really hairy, put a shirt on.
I know, Perrin's already sort of really hairy.
Yeah.
So he's already, like...
True.
Yeah. Perrin already kind of leans into this... stereotype
wolf
a little
man.
Bit. Yeah, wolf
yeah.
man. He's kind of like a burly mountain man himself.
With some, probably got gross chest hair.
So
Perrin leads into that stereotype. He's a big hairy boy, curly hair.
Yeah.
But there's always the, like, there's always like physical markers. Like their hat, because werewolves are very, it's like a very physical thing.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that again in a second. Just really quick. Basically, Elias says, you're stupid idiots, you're not anywhere near Camelin, and you're not going to get anywhere near Camelin because the direction you're traveling is not that way, you dumbasses.
Which is so funny.
Perrin kind of thinks he's crazy because he's a bit of a... He laughs at them hysterically when he finds out that they're trying to go to Camelin.
Yeah.
Perrin's like, God, he is crazy. And Elias is like, these shits.
These fuckos.
Are
Where the
so
fuck are they
stupid.
Going? They're going to the waste.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's like, have fun climbing the spine of the world. Hope you meet some ale back there.
Die in the desert, you idiots.
Is that our first reference to ale?
I think it might be our first reference to ale.
That's fun.
That is
the
fun.
Ale. The boys and
that
girls.
Is Elias.
I know.
My dad.
Yeah, Elias is one of the few who's like really comfortable with ale.
Yeah, he's like, whatever.
Yeah.
These bros. These girls.
Social outcasts, etc.
Admittedly, maidens are the most bro-y people of all time.
Truly.
We will talk about that in more depth. That needs to be unpacked. Okay. But ales are super bro-y. The maidens are super bro-y.
Anyway, sort of mid-conversation, Elias is like, shut up, my friends are coming, and you don't want to freak them out. And these wolves just, like, appear. There's four of them. Bella freaks out. They all just kind of sit down around the fire. And, Hedwig asks if they're tame. Elias says, fuck no. And I read wolves' minds and they read mine. Here are their names. That's Dapple. That's Burn. Blah, blah, blah.
It's like Hopper and then, I don't know, Moonbeam.
Yeah, some shit.
Moon.
And Dapper, Burn, Hopper, and Wind.
Wind?
Yeah.
I am the wolf named Classy. Wind.
What's your fursona?
Podcast is over. Podcast is over, although this is a good moment to talk about whether or not...
we're going to talk about it in a minute. I promise. Just let me get through this. Christ. Okay. Here's where we kind of find out the history of men talking to wolves. Elias basically says, it's a thing. It's a rare thing. Men don't know they have it. It's not related to channeling. It's just sort of a thing. It's been going on since the dawn of time. The wolves remember it. That's how we know. And they have, like, a sort of collective memory that's passed down from generation to generation. He also asks them to explain what their story is. Edwin, just like Tom, has an entire, like, made-up tale about how they're from Saldia going off to see the big city or some shit.
Yeah.
Elias is like, Try again.
Yeah, ding dong.
Ding dong, you are wrong.
My wolves know you're lying. Yeah.
My wolves are lie detectors, and they say you smell like murderel or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, fine, we'll tell you the real story. And they do. And basically, Elias agrees to guide them to Camelin, along with the wolves. And sort of drops the knowledge along the way that Perrin is one of the few who, according to the wolves, can communicate with them. And with that, let's talk about furries or some shit. That's all the synopsis we're going to do today.
And I'm sorry, Anthony, before we record this, you're like, we'll do synopsis, then we'll talk about it. And every time you pause, I was like, I have 47 things to say, so
I'm
very hyper right now, listeners, in case you missed that from the opening. But
which is going to be edited severely.
Yeah, so here's a question, guys. Weigh in on the Twitter. Is Perrin a furry?
Oh, my God. Okay. I hate this. First of all, no disrespect to the furry community. Y'all are fine.
Of course not.
Do your thing. Lovely
people.
Have your kinks. Pay artists commissions. You're great. You're the multimillionaires of artistry, I guess.
True.
So I hear.
True.
I don't think Perrin is a furry because he doesn't... Oh, this is terrible. He doesn't have a fursona.
Yeah.
He has a whole alter ego, but he's still a man in his alter ego as Young Bull in the wolf dream.
Oh, yeah!
He's almost always in man shape.
True. He is in man shape.
He has sort of blurred lines in the moment, but there's never a total crossover.
Yeah. So that excludes him from being a furry. It also does technically exclude him from being, like, a werewolf, because werewolves...
Yeah.
Like... Technically, like, we had a whole thing about this in our werewolf class at the beginning, where we had to, like, define what a werewolf was, and our professor had, like, a very specific definition where, like, there had to be, like, a form, like, a shape change, like, an actual shape
shift. It
was
a stupid definition, if you ask
me. Yeah, it was dumb. It was, like, not, it did not allow for that liminality that we love
Which
so
werewolves
much.
Are all about.
Yeah, it's all about blurring the lines, and, like, I think Elias talks about, like, Perrin is the person who can, like, stand in two worlds.
Yeah, he says... She, Edwene, is very much in this world. You are in two worlds.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting because there are so many parallels between Perrin and Edwene regarding the standing in two worlds. Like, they're both going to be in huge leadership positions. Yes, we talked about that already, but they're also both going to master Teleron Riyadh, that, like, liminal space, which is so fascinating because Edwene is throughout very much in this world.
Yeah.
It's just, like, she sort of adds the world of dreams to her arsenal. But for Perrin, it's, like, a whole other aspect of his life.
Yeah, it really is. What was I going to say? Which is really interesting because Edwene is allowed to access it, and it does become, like, almost a weapon for Edwene. Like, she always is using it, a weapon or, like, a tool, I guess, is a better way than just, like, because, yeah, it's
yeah,
used for finding
love.
Yeah, she
uses it for, like, detective work, and some of the greatest, like cool action and battle sequences, like, take place in the world of dreams.
Yeah, and she's, like... The big part where I'm right now for the past, like, couple books is, like, that's how when Edwene and Elaine and Nynaeve separate, like, that's how they talk to each other. And that's how, like, Moiraine is, like, talking to them as well and, like, they're communicating with
how
the wise
everyone,
ones.
Yeah, it's basically their world's fucking cell phones.
Yeah, it's how they do that's how they text. It. Yeah. but, like, for Edwene, it becomes a tool or something that she uses. But for Perrin, it very much becomes, like... part of him, like, it just becomes, like, I don't know exactly the word I'm looking for. A word that I do want to, like, reach for, though, is, and I don't speak German, so I hope I'm getting this right, but, like, the idea of, like, an Umwelt, E-U-M-W-E-L-T, which is the notion of, like, how the world exists, like, how a particular organism, like, experiences the world, and so, like, the Umwelt of a dog is much different than the Umwelt of a human, and so, like, the wolves very much, like, Elias talks about how, like, yes, he calls her Dapple, but technically her name means, like, the way that light breaks on a leaf in the morning wind or, like, whatever. And so the world of dreams for wolves, like, they kind of, like, move in and out of it, and it's like, part of their liminal space, and, like, Perrin steps into that umwelt a little bit, and that liminal space with the world of dreams, like, it's not just a tool, it's, like...
No, yeah, like, Perrin's entire plotline is about incorporating different parts of him into, like, one full being, basically.
Yeah.
And the idea that he can't be who he is and who he's meant to be, unless he sort of allows all the lines in his life to blur and to disappear, and for him to be just, like, one full person, like, a man and a husband, like, and a leader and a friend, and also, like, yeah, this weird wolf mind reader thing, mm-hmm. who's, like, totally part of nature, and, like, this massive cycle that goes even beyond channeling, yeah. and the power that's just, like, this connection between people and wolves.
Yeah, and it's really, again, more of that immersive fantasy, the idea, and the idea of, like, a reality effect, in that there's more to, like, it's not even really, like, magic. It is this really interesting, like, spiritual connection between Perrin and the world of wolves, but, like, some type of supernatural phenomena that isn't connected to the One Power is just a larger part of this, like, really large world and really deep system that Robert Jordan has created. And it's really interesting to me that it's wolves, because wolves are so archetypal.
Yeah, and it's like, he really does, we say Perrin isn't a werewolf, and, like, by most definitions of the word, he isn't.
Yeah.
But werewolves are really, like, playing a part in this, because, yeah, wolves are so archetypal as, like, being conflated with change and transformation, mm-hmm. and, yeah, the idea of combining two separate worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, wolves, for some reason, like, always exist in, like, humans' mind as, like, this liminal thing, like, mm-hmm. on the edges. Like, they're like dogs, so, like, almost domesticated, but they're also, they're not almost domesticated, but they, like, look like we want them to be domesticated, yes. but they're wild, they're feral. But sometimes they, like, behave really sweet like dogs, but then they'll fucking eat you. Mm-hmm. So, like, wolves are, and, like, people are, like, we also talked about this in our werewolf class, though I did not really listen, but the idea that there's, like, been deep studies about the relationships between men and wolves, like, we do have that close relationship to them, because at some point we did domesticate wolves into dogs, but also, like, there's something about wolves that is, like, deep in the human psyche, that it's something that we, like, fear, but it's something that we're really interested in. Like, there's almost this, like, uncanny relationship that people... Why are you letting me talk so much about wolves?
Because I'm going to talk a lot about wolves, too. As much as we hated that class, it's a really interesting topic when we're not in the space of that.
Yeah. Class. Honestly, werewolves are super interesting, which is why we went there.
Yeah.
But, like, then it ruined it.
We got ruined by all the dumb scenes of women getting, like, all those, there were, like, three different scenes of women getting ripped out of tents while they were about to have sex and then getting, like, mauled alive.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
It's super weird. The, like, a notion of, like, the contemporary horror notion of werewolfism and, like, violent sexuality is, like, not even contemporary werewolfism. Like, that's equated with monstrosity, like, across the board. But, like, especially with werewolves, because it's supposed to be, like, man connecting with his inner bestial nature.
Well, and it's, like, ugh. Here's the, like, timeline of werewolves goes from, like, one of our earliest werewolf stories is the one, Lycaon in Greek mythology, the man who got cursed to turn into a wolf because he, like, fed the gods his children, which...
Super fucked up.
Yeah, like, to be fair, is a pretty nasty thing to
do. Disgusting.
So he got turned into a wolf. Then we sort of move into, like, the Middle Ages when our reports and stories of werewolves were because serial killers and animal attacks happened with the same, like, brutality and the same, like, rareness that they just got, like, conflated into this one big, like, monstrous thing where man is wolf and wolf is man.
Like, the Beast of Gévaudan. Like, so many stories have come up
around
that.
Is an actual animal, but then there's also, like, these serial killers who people are just like, oh, and then they turn into a wolf.
Yeah.
That bitch didn't turn into a wolf, but, like, the mind plays tricks when you're, like, facing a fucking serial killer.
Yeah, and there was also, like...
You have the plague. You gotta deal with a serial killer,
yeah,
too.
You got the plague. Like, fucking the Inquisition is going on. And that was another part. Like, there would be, like, attacks and, like, reports, like, witch trial kind of stuff. People being like, this person is, like, a murderer and, like, a werewolf. And you get... The Inquisition gets their hands on you. And, like, if they're torturing you, be like, admit that you're a werewolf. Like, yeah, bitch, I'm a werewolf. Like, stop fucking poking me with hot wire. I don't know.
Like, interesting, because we're about to come into, like, Perrin's about to move into Spanish Inquisition.
With his, he has a really weird relationship with the White Cloaks. But so it's like people would confess, and then it's like that just, like, feeds the werewolf.
The mythos.
Yeah, the mythos.
And then it moves into, like, this whole, like, like you were talking about, sort of modern understanding of werewolf as horror genre, mm-hmm. which is where... Like, it just conflates, like, man and beast and the inability to, like, control yourself and, like, really violent sexuality.
Incredibly violent sexuality. It's, like...
Like, terribly just, like, monstrous sexuality. Like, one of the... I was just... I just looked up my old papers from that class, horrifically, and one of the movies we had to watch was The Wolfman, and I don't remember anything about this. But I wrote in the paper about how the protagonist who turns into a werewolf, like, totally deserved what was coming to him because he was, like, a peeping Tom, got obsessed with this girl, and then, like, attacked her and almost killed her, and that's when he died.
Yeah.
And, like, the metaphor almost of the movie was, like, once you can no longer, like, contain yourself and be a gentleman about, like, pursuing romance, then you've, like, crossed a line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you deserve to, that's when you're, like, an animal.
Yeah.
Anyway, so violent sexuality. Nowadays, I think, like, in our really modern understanding of werewolves, it's become more of a positive thing. Like, now we have...
Now werewolfism, yeah, because, like, thinking on, like, literally, like, What We Do in the Shadows, which is an incredible movie if you haven't seen it.
We are werewolves, not swearwolves.
Yeah, literally turn off this podcast and go watch it. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now.
It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Literally, like, why the fuck are you even listening to me? But in that, and in, like, Teen Wolf, and even, like, Twilight probably had, like, a huge part to play in this, where, like, werewolves, like, Twilight, what they do with, like, werewolves in Native American legend is,
well,
like,
we moved
troubling.
From violent sexuality to fetishizing werewolves.
Yeah.
And, like, fetishizing the idea of, like, being with a violent man who you don't know whether or not he's going to hurt you, which, like, whatever, have your kinks.
Yeah, again, at this point in this episode, have whatever kink you want, but...
Do you.
But from an academic perspective,
don't have sex with werewolves.
Don't have sex with werewolves. Don't have sex with an actual werewolf. A person dressed like a werewolf.
Title of this.
Excellent.
Yeah. Do you?
Do you? BDSM. Excellent.
Sure.
Don't have sex with an actual werewolf because first of all, it sounds like it would be painful.
God, did you? I think you managed to escape this one in that Red Riding Hood. Thing we had to, first of all, we couldn't just read it. We had to listen to it. It was this lady or man, maybe it was a man. Reading aloud a short story by a woman. This is going to horrify you. Sally is looking at me right now with both hands clasped over her mouth in horror. You don't even know what's coming. In the story, it's about a boy who meets a werewolf and fucking... I can't even... They have sex.
Oh my god, I listened to this one! No, I absolutely did! So it was so bad!
And at the moment
the pedophile werewolf!
Yeah, at the moment of penetration... When the werewolf was, like, fucking him, he also bit him, and that's how he became a werewolf. So, I had to listen to that with my human ears.
No, I remember that. I was listening to that while I did dishes. I might have honestly, like, dropped a glass and broken it.
I feel like you did. You, like, texted me.
Yeah, and I was like, this was the devil's work is in my ears right now.
It was like, what?
Yeah.
What's happening?
First of all, so many problematic things are going on there. The equation of homosexuality and pedophilia.
Ugh.
Bad.
Gross.
By penetrating someone and biting them and turning them into a werewolf, like, that's a whole bag. Like, we just gotta, like, start unpacking
we
things.
Already know that biting is a form of penetration.
Yeah.
Like, calm down. We know the werewolf bite is equated to sex. Fuck you. We don't need to actually have a sex scene.
Yeah.
To show it to us.
It's like, so first of all, my first point in this writing workshop, too heavy-handed.
Yeah, and that's, like, a whole thing. I'm about to blow your mind even more. Brace yourself.
I'm afraid.
Did you know, in fan fiction, and let me just sidebar by saying fan fiction is a wonderful medium. It allows many writers to grow as writers and, I don't know, defeat the capitalist machine that is the publishing industry. Fuck you, publishing industry.
Yeah, also take back your own canon. I love that.
Yeah, take back your own canon. Do whatever the fuck you want with it. Love fan fiction. Do you. But in fan fiction, there's an entire genre where you, like, it's like a whole universe where you use... I don't know how to describe it. Instead of having typical gender dynamics, they have people are either alphas, betas, or omegas. I know. It gets worse. I can't even talk about it. Here, I'll give you some sweet little tidbits.
Yeah, defined by example.
I'll give you some sweet little tidbits. This is how men can, in fanfiction, get pregnant.
What the fuck?
Gay sex is more pleasurable because the alphas have different dicks. I think. I don't know, I haven't read any of it. Just like
what type of dicks do they have?
Fuck if I know.
Like,
and there's some, like...
Do they, like, turn on and, like, motorize? Like, I don't get it.
They have vibrator dicks.
They have vibrator dicks. Or is it, like, in what is it, in the 100,000 Kingdoms where he, like, has some type of super godly phallus. Oh, like, God, it's not a dick. It's, like, a different shape.
Just, like, it's not a phallus. It, like, transformed to take the shape of my vagina, and it was beautiful.
Like,
and
perfectly. Yeah.
And I orgasmed so hard that I saw God.
Your own fingers got the magic.
I have to. Anyway.
Sorry.
If I magic penises.
Kate.
And also, I think the Omega people go.
That's how I feel exactly. Yep.
I think they go into heat, and there's a whole, oh, Lee's nodding, and there's a whole, like, when they go into heat, the alphas, like, can't control themselves, and it's just, like, so anyway, I'm sorry I ruined your entire night.
But where did the betas fit in?
I don't know, I think they're just normal people.
So it's, like, alpha, super dick, beta, like, your average communication major on a college campus, omega, like, bleeding out all over the place, no, like,
there's not even blood, there's just, like, yeah.
So it just, they just, like, give Omega's off, like, super horny vibes?
Yes!
That people can read with their magic alpha dicks?
Alphas are, like, super tops, and omegas are, like, hyper bottoms. I don't fucking know
why don't they just use that language? Why do they have to go into heat?
I don't know. Because it's all about how werewolves and sexuality are connected. And for some reason, everybody wants to fuck a goddamn wolf. Why does everyone want to fuck a wolf?
That is the deep question that we're getting into. Why do people want to fuck wolves? Like, actual wolves.
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Is there some, like, it's fetishized to like, bestiality. Bestiality and forbidden love. Like, gross.
Yeah, which is just, like, really troubling in terms of,
Shame you for that kink. Don't fuck dogs.
Oh, don't fuck dogs. Brie has a super
horrifying classmate? No!
Okay.
This is the most yelling we've ever done on our podcast.
And I yell a lot, so.
Okay.
Just the notion of beast fetishization of, like, beasts and monsters and wolves just is, like,
and
bad.
Masculinity and badness.
And, like, yeah, like, hurting people, and it's pleasurable, and, like, everybody wants to be dominated. And it's, like, if you do, that's great, but, like, why buy a dog?
Yeah. Why buy someone hairy?
Why buy? And it's always, like, an average white boy. It's always why an average white boy who's like, oh, I got bit by a werewolf. And now I have a super dick, I guess.
Yeah. That's how it works.
Okay. Son of a fuck. I was going somewhere really positive about Twilight and, like, werewolfism and, like, the pack and, like, fraternity.
And,
I got mad as shit. Fuck Twilight. Find a Twilight book, dip it in acid, and then throw it on your local fuckboy. I'm so done with this. I have had it. I've had it. I'm done. We haven't even covered the troubling connection of, like, female werewolfism and menstruation.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, female werewolves aren't allowed to be a thing, really. Even though, yeah, there's this whole, like, connection between, like, women and the lunar cycle and your goddamn period and stuff. But, like, there's the dearth of female werewolves is extraordinary. Even in Twilight, there's, like, what, one female werewolf, and it's, like, literally canon that she's the only biologically female werewolf in the world.
Yeah,
we don't ever see any. We encounter three people in the Wheel of Time series who can talk to wolves. All are men. Perrin, Elias, and this other dude that Perrin encounters in a village who has sort of, like, gone full
wolf. Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Who will come back later in a very sweet way, but
good. I hope he lives. I loved him. But live your best life, wolf boy. Good boy, living in the stable, living horses, much better than the wolves that everybody wants to fuck. Which I even like. Okay. We're gonna have positive discourse. I'm not gonna yell too much anymore.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just am, like, so upset.
It's 12-year-olds writing it. I just want you to know, for the most part, it's 12-year-olds. They just don't know. God bless them. They just don't know.
But it's like, they don't know, and there's, like, things in the media that are, like, feeding this weird, troubling sexual obsession with fucking dogs. Like, And because it's like, you've got Twilight, and she's like, oh, Jacob, he turns into a wolf. And it's like...
He has abs now.
And he has abs now. And I'm like, honey...
Not to mention the troubling conflation between werewolves and Native Americans.
That's like, yeah, that's what I was talking about when I was talking about Twilight being troubling. It's like, she just like, was like, oh, it has to be like, I have to have a reason. It's like, you need a reason for werewolves? There's never been a fucking reason for werewolves. Why are you just going to suddenly like bring Native Americans into this as if like we haven't been shitty enough to them?
Werewolves, for the most part, aren't part of the Native American mythos at all.
There's skinwalkers, maybe, but that's a totally different thing.
There's skinwalkers, but skinwalkers are generally considered evil and, like, related to cannibalism.
Yeah.
And I just read an entire book of, like, Native American mythology, and, like, there's a huge amount of blurred lines between the animal world and the human world, but it's, like, never specifically wolves, for one thing. And for another thing, it's all very positive and natural. There are, like, people who are, like, going off. There was a woman who, like, married a snake dude, and it was, like, totally chill. Like,
good for her.
He was a dude. Sometimes he was a snake. Sometimes they had snake babies. Like,
I want snake babies.
Baby turned into snakes. I know. I was, like, good for them. Bite people.
Hell yeah. Establish your baby dominance.
That's going to be the title of this episode.
It's a very misleading title. No, it's pretty accurate. So, it's just, like, this whole troubling bag of problematic...
Smorgasbord of terrible things going on, and with Perrin, it's, like, he's moving into adulthood, and he also has to deal with the fact that he's a berserker who has, like, violent tendencies when he's in battle and gets bloodthirsty, and I don't know if that's related, like, because of the wolf thing, or just, like, another metaphor for it, but he has to deal with, like, violence versus, like, making things and being creative.
Which is just more, like, masculine, feminine energy. Like, yes. Creative is always coded feminine, whereas, like, destruction, basically, is what's on the other end of him is coded super masculine. And, like,
this Even though the wolves are, like, such a positive.
Yeah, they're such a positive, and, like, they're all, like, super... They're just, like, living their wolfy lives out in the woods with their female leader, Dapple. Yep.
I kept calling her Dapple.
She is dapper.
I know, but for her.
Fucking killing it. Smarter than all these other dumb alpha wolf wannabes.
I guess I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel like Robert Jordan does a good job with the wolves themselves.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting part of the world, and having the wolves, which you're right, are like such a deep part of basically Jungian archetypes, mm-hmm. and having that connected to the dream space, which is like a space of archetypes. Like, that's really neat and really cool. Perrin being this werewolf thing, one of these people who can talk to wolves, can be really annoying at times because it gets so, like, in your face about these adulthood metaphors. It's at its coolest and it's at its, like, most worthy of being in these books when, like, Perrin is being taught by wolves how to navigate the dream world. Like, that's fucking badass.
Super cool.
But in these, like, first few moments when it's just, like,
what...
Am I going to be a leader? Am I going to be a wolf? Am I going to be a wolf man? Is anyone going to want to fuck my super dick? Like, God.
Don't worry. Fail will hella want to fuck your super dick. That's like, she sees you and she's like, ah.
Fail literally is like, that dick is mine.
Yeah. She like fucking points at it with a laser pointer and like circles it for the whole end to see. And is like, this dick belongs to me.
And Karen's like, is she evil? And Marion's like, fucking no.
She wants to
just pointed at your dick.
Fuck your, wants to fuck you, Perrin. That is one of my favorite scenes when he's like, this lady was staring at me and like, I'm pretty worried about it. And Marion, who was like about to like disrobe to probably like take a bath and like get
for her.
Rid of the shit.
Or use her vibrator.
Yeah. Or probably, honestly, she's like, I need some time with my best friend.
I need an orgasm. I'm really stressed.
I'm very stressed. Orgasms are very good for releasing endorphins and lowering stress. There you go, kiddos. If you didn't know, I hope you did, but sex ed is very troubling across the nation these days. So Moiraine, now canonically, speaking of make your own canon, canonically was about to get naked and use her vibrator to de-stress from her quest of trying to defeat
the evil. Do you think there's a Tyrion real vibrator?
I'm just saying. Dude, face crack of the century is what just happened right now. Is that we have to stop. We're done talking about
we're
wolves.
We're already over time.
We're done talking about wolves. Is
this
there
one
a
time,
real vibrator?
This one time we were like, let's make 45 minute episodes. And then we fucked that right up.
Yeah, also sorry about that. We just talk a lot. We had a lot to say about wolves. None of it was conclusive.
Yeah, I'm no closer to understanding wolves than I was at the beginning of Studies of Genre. English
50-50, I think.
Yeah, it was
I started talking about Moraine and her vibrator. And I was going to say something about Perrin. I'm, like, rereading this book, I like Perrin way less than I did the first time
I read
this
book. Yeah, I remember you were like, he's delightful. And I was like, yes, he is in comparison. But
I think I was really just, like, annoying. So hung up on how much I hated Rand. And Matt is so, like, absent throughout these books. And what Matt is very weird in the first book. He, like, has not, like,
settled.
He's still, like, super, he's, like, that hyper kid in class where I was like, shut the fuck up, Matt. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I'm reading this and I'm like, I hate Perrin. His plotline is, like, Rand's plotline is at least interesting, even if the character is boring. Like, Perrin is a boring character and his plotline is boring because it is literally the traditional, like, struggle between man and beast in, like, a stupid way. Like, it's so dumb. And, like, it's like, I don't know if I'm oversaturated with werewolves these days, but the conflict between man and beast is so not interesting. Because then it's always about, like, what Perrin can control when he's in battle, and, like, do people like me better when I'm a more violent wolf man? Why won't anybody like me if I don't have my axe? Like,
which weapon is better, axe or hammer? Oh, I don't know. They both cause similar amounts of bloodshed when you bash them against a human skull, Perrin. Why the fuck are you asking me this stupid-ass question? No,
it's like... it's so boring. Yeah, I'm so bored with it. Like, and yeah, it's used as, like, a stupid adulthood metaphor. Or, like, it's used as, like, I don't know. I'm super bored with Perrin and super bored with the wolves. Because it would just be super cool if Perrin was allowed to, like, talk to wolves. And Robert Jordan was able to, like, separate it from all this, like, using it as a metaphor. And that's the problem with werewolves. Like, we also talked about this in our class. Like, werewolves cannot escape being a metaphor for violent sexuality, pedophilia, for literally for menstruation. Like, mm-hmm. once a month you turn into this beast that, like, I don't know, wants to fuck everything and eat stuff. And I'm like, have literally these are all written by men.
Sociopaths. Like,
yeah, sociopaths. Like, it has to be, like, a metaphor as opposed to, like, these wolves just being, like, their own creatures and, like, existing in their own space. It's, I don't know. I hate it. I just want it to be more cool. Because the wolves deserve better.
Let's list a few positive things about Wheel of Time.
We've really bashed the fuck out of it. Positive thing about Wheel of Time.
I can't say Matt.
Damn. A positive thing about this section is Bella the horse. MVP of this section. Bella, one. Probably basically, like, swims edge weens drowning ass to safety.
She literally does.
Yeah.
Which means, like, I just held on to Bella and she got me right.
And Bella was just, like, fucking doggy paddling, be like, I got this shit. I've been training Bella's my whole like, Michael horse Phelps life.
Who?
Yeah. Michael Phelps my ass. Bella, throw shade at Perrin's thick ass every time he gets up to ride. She's like, I hate this. This is stupid. Bella, a literal plow horse who never in her life has had to be delicate.
She steps the fuck up.
Yeah, steps the fuck up. And also, Elias is like, you and your girl, not your girl, you and the girl are so fucking loud. I could hear you from Camelin, which is 75,000 miles away.
Perrin's but like, I'm good at woodcraft in silence. And he's like, suck a dick, Perrin. Yeah. No, you're not.
But he's like, but the horse, she's doing great. Delicate little flower girl. Beautiful. Braided her own hair that morning.
Speaking of positives, Elias. My crazy hermit, secluded from literally everyone, uncle. What an icon.
But Elias is the 2018 mood.
Yeah. Huge goals.
Yeah.
Just leave society. Live with some wolves.
Live with some wolves. Hell yeah. Another positive. Edgeween. Love her. Icon.
Yeah. Would die for her.
Would die for her. Wolves in general are positive. It's just when they're like.
Remember that showdown when Dapple is like, fuck you, Burn. You don't want to hang out with the people anymore. You can fucking go your own way. And he's like,
go
fine.
Your own way.
Yeah, and sings a Zac Efron song, leaves.
A Zac Efron song? That's Fleetwood Mac.
I know. I was thinking of the Zac Efron song. I was High School Musical.
Okay.
Actually, that's Vanessa Hudgens. I gotta go. I don't know the tune at all.
I gotta go. I'm still with Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, you're still Fleetwood Mac.
I love that song.
Who doesn't? It's a great song.
Great song.
Modern American masterpiece.
Modern American fucking masterpiece. So there are lots of positives to Wheel of Time. Robert Jordan's troubling contribution to bad werewolf stories is not one of them. Not one of them.
And that's the tea. You heard it here,
folks. That's the tea. That's the shade. That's the pink lemonade.
Next week, we are going to take a break from werewolves, but believe me, there will be a part two.
They'll be back.
They'll be back. We are going to journey, to pirates. with the Dem boys. I'm going to do some skipping around in these next couple of sections. Like, I know the Perrin slash Rand point of view chapters are really interspersed, so we might just be like, I know we're going to be with Rand and jump around with him for a little while.
That might be a good idea.
Yeah. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll try it out.
Housekeeping. We're on iTunes. There might have been some problems recently getting onto iTunes. It's just because our Podomatic storage was full and we had to, like, wait for it to reset. Is that true?
Yeah, I upgraded us, though.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because I had money in my PayPal and it was an impulse purchase. But I think
kind
it was
of like the microphones that don't work.
Yeah, I think it was a good impulse purchase because now we have a lot of bandwidth.
That's great.
And so you guys should be able to listen to us, no problems. Yes, we're on iTunes. We're still on Podomatic.
We're on Twitter.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter.
Tumblr.
At @EHR_podcast. Tumblr, Everybody Hates Rand. Instagram is also Everybody Hates Rand. I think on one episode I might have said our Instagram handle is also EHR Podcast, but it's not. It's just at Everybody Hates Rand. So
you can find us there. our Gmail, don't know if you've said this in a while, is everybodyhatesrand@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We welcome messages. If you have questions or anything, probably between books we'll do just like Q&As.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
A couple people asked just, like, opinion questions and, like, have sent in some fun stories.
Conversation topics.
Yeah,
conversation topics. That don't necessarily come up in the course of the books.
Yeah, course of the books. Although, is Perrin a furry is a fan question that we received that I then latched onto and needed to have that discussion. So.
Well, and then I had to, like, think about it.
Yeah, Emily did a really great job.
And explaining furries.
Yeah, and if you are a member of the furry community and we did a bad job, like, let us know. It's not your responsibility. Like, we need to educate
ourselves.
Don't,
like, let me know on my personal Twitter. Do that on the...
Yeah, please. Do it on our...
I'm just saying my whole family reads.
My personal shit. Twitter. But yeah, you can do it on my personal Twitter.
My very Mormon family.
But yeah, you can feel free to let us know. Like, we're always open to constructive criticism. And we are, as I heard it from Gloria Steinem, but it's not a Gloria Steinem quote, unlearning as well as learning. So.
Hell yeah. Do you have a sign-off?
I do have a sign-off that's related to what we talked about. I don't know if it will be kept in the opening. If it's not, that's fine. But one of my favorite fun facts, of which I have many and I'm just full of fun facts, is that the tradition of, like, telling the bees. So, like, if a beekeeper, you know, have these, there's bees and there's lots of, like, mythic associations with, like, bees and prosperity. And so a big thing was to, like, tell the bees about, like, births in the family or marriages, but, like, especially deaths. Like, you come and tell, like, if the beekeeper dies, someone has to go and tell the bees that the beekeeper has died so that they can, like, basically, like, decide to stay at that hive with a different beekeeper. The beekeeper has to, like, introduce formally. It's super lovely. I love this tradition. And so I was telling my mom about it, and she was, like, thought, contemplative. I said that word totally wrong, but, like, thinking about it, and she's, like, one of my uncles kept bees. I wonder if somebody told his bees when he died. And now I have to carry that shit around. Now every day when I wake up, I'm like, did anybody tell his fucking bees? Like, do I have to go? His name was Dempsey. So Dempsey's bees, if you're listening, he passed away.
Dempsey's dead.
Dempsey is dead.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. And so, like, do I have to go on a fucking spirit quest to Louisiana to, like, tell these bees? Do I have to do that? I've already gone on multiple spirit quests to Louisiana, and none of them have ever ended
first
well.
First the rocking chairs, now the bees.
First the rocking chairs, where I literally almost died.
Yeah, true.
So that's what, if you see a bee this week, be like, hey, tell your friends, the Dempsey bees, that Dempsey, may he rest in peace, is dead. Have a great week. Talk to some bees and some pigeons.
Talk to you later.